Happy President's Day to you. Happy day after Valentine's weekend, after day after All-Star weekend. A lot went on this weekend. Brenda and I went to the best little community theater, I would say, in America, the Music Box Theater over on Southport in Chicago. Is that Southport? And they always have great shows there. That is vintage old movies as well as current movies. And then they do live things on stage sometimes. I don't know how many movie theaters still have an organist playing music before the theater. And for Valentine's Day, they had, and this, we actually went over the, we didn't go on Friday, we went on Sunday. They showed on the big screen Casablanca. Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine. That was my Humphrey Bogart, in case you didn't know.
We knew.
Thank you. So they showed that, but beforehand, they played songs on the organ, good old-fashioned love songs, and they had the bouncing ball, sort of. The lyrics appeared on the screen. And it's kind of like time travel, but there were young people who didn't even know some of these old classic love songs, and there were some old people who forgot they remembered those old songs up on the screen. One of them was Moon River. And so here's the guy playing the organ, and he's awesome, and it's an awesome organ. And there's 1,000 people in this theater all going Moon River. Wow. with popcorn and beer, Chardonnay, soda, whatever you want. That's the way we do theaters these days. And so everybody is singing along. And that was really fun. I just thought, oh, this is so sweet. When one of the lyrics appeared on the screen, it almost gave me pause because I thought it was just such a sweet sentiment. And it's in that song Moon River. Twice in the song, this set of lines appears. Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see. We're after that same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend Moon River and me. It's a song about a river, but really it's a song about, of course, companionship, friendship, and love. And I thought how lucky some of us are, and I know it's not everybody, and for some of you, you're glad Monday's here so that we can get done with this lovey-dovey stuff, but I wish for you to be one of two drifters off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see, and how lucky you would be when you are after the same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend. Wouldn't it be nice to have a huckleberry friend, Moon River and me? And I know that song. Andy Williams used to sing it, of course. It's funny because when you Google it now, Frank Ocean's name comes up. Frank Ocean! Hey, Ella, if we've got time, let's start with the Moon River Andy Williams version, right? So this is Andy Williams, and you're familiar with this.
Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see.
So you know how that goes. And so I type in to get the lyrics, Moon River. And the lyrics come up, but the name next to it is Frank Ocean. I love Frank Ocean, but I didn't even know he'd covered that song. Now, I'll play a little of it for you here. You aren't going to recognize it if the only version you know is Andy Williams. And because of that, some of you are going to hate this. Some of you are going to love this. I'm in the second group. It doesn't always have to be the way Andy did it, and I think this is terrific.
Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a crazy world to see. We're all chasing after our end. Chasing after our end. Hey, a river wider than a mile.
Different versions of the same song. And
sounds like he's drunk.
I love it. It sounds great.
Mary, could you just wipe the slate clean and give somebody a new chance to paint
trying.
On that canvas?
I did try.
It wasn't working for you?
No,
Steve, you like it.
I like it. Yeah.
He was off
I
key.
Like No, he wasn't.
He's gone.
Let's go to the ultimate arbiter of all things musical, Dave Ennett. Dave, when did 23 Juju
beats? After listening to Chaka Khan last night. Oh, my God.
Well, the first song I ever learned to play on the piano was Moon River. So I'm a little partial to the original.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
But I like that. I like the Frank Ocean version.
Lots of unsolicited texts about the Frank Ocean versus Andy Williams versions of Moon River. Andy Williams was my choice. What about the Chevy Chase version? Look, I'm not doing this. I just found that when I Googled Moon River, the Frank Ocean version came up first. I'm not going down that road. John, that was my in-law's song. Dang it, now I'm crying. John, perhaps if it was enunciated, it would be better. No, it would not be better if he said Moon River. He was just feeling it. Here's what you get, Steve. You and I are of like mind on this. What you got from the Frank Ocean version, I think, was the feeling. It's a longing. I don't mind it that I couldn't understand all the words.
I didn't have a problem hearing the words, actually. Maybe a little bit, but not such that it made me not enjoy the song.
John Andy Williams rolling over in his grave.
People are agreeing with me, guys. You know, this was not good.
Let's stop reading the text line. Really, I don't think there's any great value.
Everybody agrees with me.
Well, if we could play the Frank Ocean version for just a few seconds one more time for us. Did we hear this correctly?
Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a crazy world to see.
Chasing what?
I think sometimes when you hear a song the first time, if it's not familiar, then you don't like it as much as the second time. I think having heard it a second time, you're going to like it a lot more now, right?
I like redos. I just don't like
that one.
Like when people redo Alleluia, there's so many beautiful,
ones. Yeah.
But, yeah.
That one didn't work for you. Well, you know what, Mary, I'm not going to... And shame on me for arguing with you. You get to have your own opinion.
That's right.
Thank you, Elif.
My new Elif would like it.
She's hip and cool. Yeah. Like us kids in the front row.
He's not.
I should give you this, though. It's really sad and depressing.
Well, it is that.
Compared to the original.
Any version is. I guess maybe this one is a little more forlorn than the one that plays in your head the first time.
But the original is really pretty, and if you're in the wrong mood, it can... strike a chord.
Oh, stop sucking up to Mary now.
What? I didn't. I was saying the original.
The original. Well, the Andy Williams version, you mean?
Yeah. I've listened to it when I was sad, and it just did not help.
The song is just a sad song.
It is.
The original was in a movie.
Yeah.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Was it Breakfast at Tiffany's? Mm-hmm. Johnny Mercer and Henry Mancini.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick note, too, just because I'm just taking you down my weekend's memory lane. So they played that song on the screen at the Music Box Theater before we watched Casablanca. Then Casablanca comes up, this classic old, of course, 1942 movie with Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman, whose daughter is Isabella Rossellini. And boy, do they sound a lot alike. I noticed the pitch and the tones of their voices. But there are so many classic lines from Casablanca. Okay, I'll point to you and give me the first line that comes to mind if I say Casablanca. Dave, go.
Play it again, Sam.
Mary, one come to mind for you?
That was mine. Oops.
How about Steve Grzanich?
Of all the gin joints.
Listen to this. Here's looking at you, kid. He says that three times. Kiss me as if it were the last time. Is original to that movie. It's still the same old story. A fight for love and glory is in this movie. Of all the gin joints and all the towns and all the world, she walks into mine. Round up the usual suspects is delivered to great comedic effect in that movie a few times. Are you sure this place is honest? Honest as the day is long. I'm shocked to find gambling going on here. Great line. They finally find a reason to shut down Rick's Cafe. They say, well, it's gambling. And then the police sergeant stands up and says, I'm shocked, shocked to find gambling going on here. Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. We'll always have Paris is in Casablanca. It doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. If you don't know every word of that line, you sure remember that line, don't you?
Yep.
And here's looking at you again. By the way, you know, the great trivia question about all of that is that in Casablanca, he doesn't say, play it again, Sam. He dances around that a lot of times in the movie, but the closest you get is play it once, Sam, for old time's sake. Play it once, Sam, for old time's sake, but not play it again, Sam. I don't know if you've seen that movie in a while. Maybe you've never seen Casablanca. I believe on Sunday when they showed it at the Music Box, that was the first time I watched it all the way through. And you know how old movies don't hold up? I mean, in 20 years, this movie's going to be 100 years old. And it's terrific. It really is. The performances are good. The cinematography, such as it is,
the score.
1942, the score. There's just some great takes in there. We really had a nice time. So I don't know if you're clicking around looking for movies to watch these days, but I recognize that. Although at our house, we are watching Stephen King's The Outsider. Is anybody looking at that HBO series, The Outsider? Pretty good. And we're also clicking through the episodes we got behind on The Crown. And The Crown never disappoints. There's not one episode of that. And it's not all true what you see in The Crown, but it usually has a foot in the truth somewhere, you know, of what actually happened with the royal family or does happen with the royal family. But very, very much enjoyed that. And then just one last quick note here about what you are and aren't watching on TV. Cubs still not available to Comcast subscribers in Chicago, but available to Hulu subscribers yes, in Chicago.
As of today, that announcement was made.
So now, so that's just another decision for you about what you're going to do and how you're going to consume TV. Are you going to have HBO? Are you going to have Showtime? Are you going to have Hulu? Are you going to have Comcast? There's so many different ways to consume TV. And for Cubs fans, maybe if you're going to cut the Comcast cable, I'm not suggesting you do. Maybe you won't if they don't get it because you don't want to pay the upcharge. Maybe you won't have it. I'm going to bet that you will, that Comcast will do a deal with Marquee and that you will have an upcharge in your bill. You with me on that one, Dave Bennett?
Yeah, I think so. I think they'll figure out a way to get it done. Hulu Plus Live TV. So if you're a Hulu subscriber, you get that, right?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
I don't know.
I'm not a Hulu subscriber.
Somebody with Hulu, call 312-981-7200 or text 312-981-7200 and tell me what your Hulu subscription is like, because I'm sorry, we've had these sorts of conversations before with various experts. But this, I know my world. I know how I do Comcast. I know how we do Netflix. I know how we do On Demand. That's our range. I believe we've actually found a way to cobble together the most expensive possible cable bill.
Congratulations.
If you want to know how to do it, give me a call. I'll tell you what you do. You subscribe to Showtime and HBO, and then you subscribe because there's a show on each of those that you still have to watch. And then you get yourself some Netflix and some Amazon Prime and Comcast. You just put all that in a pot and stir. And the next thing you know, you've got $200+, my friend.
Yeah, it's out of control. It's getting out of control.
It's hard. You know, it's not only out of control.
It makes
Steve,
me angry when I think about it.
It does me too. So I've chosen not to look.
Same here. Same here.
Every now and then I just don't even want to see my cable bill. But I think it's not only, quote unquote, out of control. It's just confusing. It's just hard to know what the best course is.
And I'm like you. There are those shows that I have to watch. Like there's the couple of shows I have to watch on HBO. That's why I keep HBO. There's a show that I have to watch on Hulu. And it's one of those situations where I think if something were to happen negatively in the economy or I needed to save money, those would be the first places to go, too. That's going to be the first cut.
That's a really good point. I mean, don't be the smarty pants and say, well, you don't have to do anything. We understand what Steve means, and we all have those shows that we have to watch. and an expense we're willing to bear. Lucky that many people have the discretionary dollars these days to spend it on media. But I got this text from a friend here, and it says, we had no intention to pay for marquee sports Cubs coverage for a number of reasons, but we got a letter over the weekend that our bill is going up $2.40. I think I forgot to bring the letter per month because we have the RCN sports package, and they're bundling the Cubs in with the RCN sports package. So for the RCN people who will get it, this listener says their bill now goes up $2.40, and they don't want to spend $2.40, I think, on the Cubs in principle. And they don't, you know, the principle of the upcharge, and maybe they're not Cubs fans. But now they have no choice. Now, they could cancel RCN or RCN Sports, but they really want to watch their Big Ten basketball team. And so it's the baby and the bathwater. So we can't get rid of the sports channels. Grr. If you want to see the letter, I'll bring it in. It was not too complimentary of Marquee. Yeah, I haven't seen the letter, but thanks for the heads up on that. More text messages about Frank Ocean's version of Moon River. John, that's god-awful. It's no longer romantic. I think he's drunk. I'm not going to argue. Yeah, I agree with Mary. Boy, lots of these, huh, Mary? Did you write some of these?
No. But they're nice to read.
John, what's next? The Halloween song? Please stop. Halloween time, I usually play the Shags version.
Oh, yeah.
It's Halloween.
Oh, no.
And that song is bad. Yeah. It's also 9:30. Okay, a little bit of that. Hey, did you see, though, that this guy that does the scorekeeping for the Bulls and the White Sox, a lot of teams in town, I think he's only missed like one, what is it, Bulls game in his career or White Sox game in his career?
Has he even missed that?
It's amazing. It's a name that you know better than I do, right? Bob Rosenberg. He is the scorekeeper of Chicago. And he was keeping the score for the Bulls. He's selling his Bulls championship rings. We'll tell you why and what they think they're going to get after the news.
This measure was never intended to ban anyone from pumping their gas at the pump.
But nothing in the one-sentence description, Section 5, nothing says that. It says the exact opposite of that. It says it has to be pumped by a gas station attendant employed at the station. Who wrote this thing?
Hey, now this is Civics 101. Let me say, again, this deal is not to ban anyone from pumping their gas.
I know, but it says the opposite.
It's a vehicle. Have your vehicle
warmer. Aha, get it. She said vehicle. Love ya. I need ya. I want ya. I couldn't resist the pun. God in heaven, you know I love. There's such a disconnect between what the bill says and what you're saying makes sense, but it's just it's the opposite of what was proposed. So I just want to know how that happens.
Yeah, it is a shell bill, a vehicle to address a measure.
Is it going to mandate that gas stations have somebody at the ready to pump my gas at all times?
Great question.
God bless you, Camille Lilly of Oak Park. Thank you for coming on our show on Friday. She's the woman that is the author behind that bill that said that in Illinois, nobody can get gas unless it is pumped by a gas station attendant who is employed by the gas station. Now, it's just a proposal, but we put her on to ask her more about it. And then she said, well, what she means is anybody can pump the gas, but it should be more convenient and we need to have safety. And we couldn't put two and two together during that interview because the bill says the exact opposite of what she was telling us was her intention. And we asked her, how does that happen then? You know, you want something to go up and your bill says it's going to go down. How does that happen? And after 20 minutes, I still didn't come away with a clear answer to that. In fact, I think what we really learned is that when things don't go real well in Springfield, you sort of now know why. She seemed like a nice lady, and it seemed a little bit out of her hands. but it's her bill with her name on it. And the one sentence description is the exact opposite of her intention. And when she said, well, it's a vehicle, that song came to mind. But lo and behold, today is a day of musical coincidences here on WGN Radio. It's 9:43. Good morning. This is John Williams. I was clicking around on our website today, and there is a conversation that Pete McMurray had with Jim Peterik from Ides of March. That's the vehicle song. His wife Karen was in the studio as well. They've been frequent guests on WGN Radio over the years. And as it turns out, Peterik was telling McMurray about how, actually his wife Karen was talking about how that song came to be. And Pete had never heard the explanation for it, and I hadn't either. I don't normally do two mashups in a row, but humor me here for a second.
I walk her home, and right in the alley behind Larry Millis' house, she kisses me.
What?
Yeah.
Boy, we're really sharing Karen. All here.
And it was quite a kiss. I mean...
Let's stop it right there.
Wow.
I had never done a kiss like that.
Really?
No.
And how long did you two date before you got married?
4 years.
4 years. Yeah.
Now, I did want to see what other guys were like, so we kind of broke up here or there, which prompted some great material for songs for him.
Really?
Mainly vehicle. I wrote that to win her back.
You're kidding.
Nope.
Are you kidding me?
Nope. She started calling me for rides, but it's not a date, Jim. Okay, got it. So I took her to modeling school. Two weeks later, Jim, that was really fun. Can you take me to modeling school again? Did it again. All of a sudden, I'm thinking... I'm just her limousine service. I'm just her vehicle, baby.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You're kidding.
No. Stranger in the black sedan. I want you hop inside my car. I got pictures, got candy. I'm a lovable man, and I can take you to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take you anywhere you want to go. I'm your vehicle, woman. By now, I'm sure you know that I love you. Love you. I need you. Need you. I want you, got to have you tried. Great God in heaven, you know I love.
Never heard this story.
True story, and I wrote the song, showed it to the band. It was, man, I captured lightning in a bottle, man. Went to Fairbanks Studios, Columbia Studios, which used to be on Fairbanks. In two takes, we captured vehicle. Went to number one all across the country. Suddenly we're on the road with Led Zeppelin and Janis Joplin.
Oh, my gosh.
Guess who starts calling me again?
Oh, boy.
Another good conversation with Pete over the weekend with Jim Peterik. Bob's on line three. Bob, I'm going to do something different, but I appreciate you calling in. You're a former lobbyist, right?
Yes, sir.
What did you want to say about that bill that Camille Lilly's talking about?
Okay, when you ended the conversation, all of a sudden I heard she said vehicle shell bill, okay? The first vehicle bill I ever dealt with was House Bill 2458, and that was in the 80s. And basically the bill said something to do with libraries. They were going to make some changes on libraries. Okay, it passed. It goes through committee. No problem. Passes the House. No problem. Okay, it gets over to the Senate side, and it goes through committee. It goes to second reading at the Senate, and then what happens is at the second reading, the bill gets stripped. Okay. And it got stripped. Everything relating to libraries gets removed, other than the first.
Yeah.
Other than the first word "the," and then what was inserted now was bills dealing, you know, a whole series of legislation dealing with the Department of Transportation and.
Things not related to what you started to do. I'm short of time, Bob, but your point is, you told producer Elif this, that this ain't going anywhere, right?
I don't, because I'm surprised that it had such a subject matter for a vehicle bill. Usually, a vehicle bill is usually a placeholder, something, okay, we're gonna increase lights per square foot along the highway from 150 to 75 feet.
Right.
Something very innocuous. But then the Madigans and the former Cullertons and everything get to go to work. And
they can change it around. No, I understand how those work. And I think what's notable here is that there's no appetite for any component of her bill, period, even if the language or intent changes. I'm short of time, Bob, but I appreciate your call. I'm going to go from you to Bill Huggins for a minute. Bill is a guy who runs an auction house. Hey, Bill, this is John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you, Bill?
Good, John. How about you today?
Good. I want to read you Phil Thompson's opening paragraph in a story in the Tribune last week. Bob Rosenberg lost a baseball job he cherished. He's been the longtime scorekeeper for the White Sox and Cubs, and because of the subsequent loss of income, he said he's going to part with perhaps the most coveted collection of rings in Chicago sports history. He was also over the years, and still is, the scorekeeper for the Chicago Bulls. And when they had that run in the 90s, they gave him championship rings for all 6 years. He said now he's lost money because he doesn't get to keep score at White Sox games, say, this year. Major League Baseball and he have parted ways. So he's auctioning them off, and you're doing the auction. Is that right?
Yes, it's an ongoing auction. It ends this Thursday. And it started on Friday, February 7th, and it's been going on. And it ends Thursday night when everybody decides they're done, you know.
Coinciding with the All-Star break, probably a good idea for the NBA entry.
Yeah, I couldn't have picked the timing any better for that, sure.
So are bids coming in, and what are the rings at right now?
The current bid's $125,000.
For all six, right?
I anticipated getting a lot more action this week, for sure.
Thompson says in his story that years ago, a Japanese investor offered him $450,000, and he declined. You're selling the six altogether, not piecemeal, right?
Yes. I think the fact that it comes with a special case that, if I have the story correct, Jerry Reinsdorf, there are only a handful of people who have all six of the rings. They were, you know, the Bulls did it in sort of two three-peats with, I believe, a couple years in between, and the players changed a lot other than Pippen and Jordan.
Oh, right,
Phil
Jackson.
Right. Those are the three guys who have all six rings, and other than that, I don't think there's any players, and Bob being the icon that he is with the Bulls, gosh, he's virtually seen every Bulls game.
It's not the same coach for both sets of three either, so...
Well, the coach was there. Jackson was there.
Yeah, Phil
did all six?
Why do I have it in mind that
he didn't do one
No,
of them?
He was there for all six.
Okay. So Scotty,
yeah,
Michael.
This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Literally. I mean, is Jordan and Pippen and Phil going to sell their rings? I kind of doubt that, you know.
This
is really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for some fan or investor or something to
the auction closes on Thursday
with the same name on it.
The auction closes Thursday, right?
Yes.
And I suppose you imagine that it's going to ramp up right towards the very end, huh?
Thursday is a very big day for our auction. We have about 1,500 lots. It's at HugginsAndScott.com is the website that you can go to see the item and all the other items and everything. And yeah, the bidding ends at, it starts at 11 o'clock with a 30-minute timer, and when nobody bids for 30 minutes on each item, the item ends. So that's how the rings are going to end.
Okay, what's the website again? Give it to us one more time.
It's HugginsAndScott.com, HugginsAndScott.com, HugginsAndScott.com.
Like I'm going to spend that kind of money on the rings. I don't have that money to spend on the rings, but if I had those rings, I would sell those rings. I think if somebody said, hey, John, $250,000 for six rings that you got in a vault, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I believe Bob doesn't wear them. They're sitting in either a safe deposit box, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's what he said, yeah.
They were. Yeah.
All right. Well, unless you and I visit on Thursday, today's Monday, and we'll see how things are going. Maybe on Friday, too. HugginsAndScott.com. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for your time this morning. It's 10:05. This is WGN. Hi, it's John Williams. Happy Monday. Happy President's Day. President Thomas Jefferson will be our guest after 10:30. Haven't talked to TJ in a while. He and I will appear on stage in Downers Grove September 26th. Tickets aren't on sale yet, but mark your calendars. Every fall, I do a stage conversation with President Jefferson or President Roosevelt. This time we're doing it with TJ, and that's going to be at the Tivoli Theater again in Downers Grove. We sell out every year, and it's, if nothing else, worth circling on your calendar. Going to your laptop, your device, I don't know how you remember dates these days, but I want you to remember...
String around the finger.
September 26th. It'll be there for a while. September 26th. 9/26. This is more for me right now than you. September 26th. Tivoli Theater. Downers Grove. Thomas Jefferson. On the eve of what will be a most fascinating presidential election, talks to you and me. That's why we always put those conversations close to, you know, the first, what is it, Tuesday in November? This time it's a little earlier than that, September 26th, but that's just the way it all lined up. But our fall conversation with the president in advance of the election, and the thing is, I don't know if you're a Republican or Democrat or an independent, if you're mad at everybody or if you really like somebody, I'm just telling you that when you come out of these shows, you are renewed. It's like a two-hour spiritual retreat, feeling good about America, and you're amused. Our Thomas Jefferson has memorized more Thomas Jefferson than Jefferson did. Jefferson wrote 26,000 letters. Our guy can quote from all of them. And so he and I have a conversation on stage, spontaneously, just about whatever, current events, and, you know, what it was like to have slaves, for crying out loud. That's the TJ legacy. And then you get to ask questions, too. Now, I'm sure people will ask questions about impeachment, and they will ask questions about the power of the Congress. One topic that comes up, especially on the fourth year, is the Electoral College. Jefferson was no fan. So what did the Founding Fathers have in mind? We'll say hello to Mr. Jefferson on President's Day in about 30 minutes. And I'm just reminding you, what's the date of that show now? Bertrand, what's the date of the Jefferson show?
September 26th, John.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Says so on my finger.
At the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. I like synchronicities, little coincidences. You know, I was talking about Casablanca a little while ago and how much fun we had enjoying, you know, how much we enjoyed watching it. We also were talking about Cubs tickets and how the Cubs will or won't be available on TV around here. And 708 said, hey, John, let's not forget that the screenplay Casablanca was written by Theo Epstein's great uncles. Somebody else said Casablanca's head screenwriter was Theo Epstein's great-grandfather. Either way, Epstein, Cubs, Casablanca, all on the same peg. If I knew that, I forgot that. Thank you for the heads up. And about our playing Moon River, John, local Evanston girl Nancy Gustafson sang Moon River with Pavarotti in Italy as a last-second replacement for a major Motown singer, and that aired for years on Pavarotti and Friends 2, a PBS special on WTTW. It's on the DVD.
I think we know Nancy Gustafson, don't we?
Oh, wow. How do I know that name?
She's been in. I think you talked to her. I talked to her.
Yeah. Son of a gun. You're right, Steve. I thought I was recognizing it just from this story, but she's been in our studio before.
Very nice.
And Moon River is also very impactful in Born on the 4th of July. Tom Cruise playing Ron Kovich, slow dancing with his girlfriend one last time before he goes off to Vietnam. It's a very moving scene. Thank you for all of that. A pet topic of mine, maybe because I ride the CTA, is CTA safety. We had a spokesperson for the CTA on last week. And I also noticed that Mary Wisniewski wrote about CTA safety in the Tribune today. Did you see this story? Here is what's frustrating about Wisniewski's story, and that is that it's a guide to what to do to be safe on the L. And almost everything in the guide is after something bad has happened. I mean, you just feel like sitting ducks. I'm not mad at you, Mary, and I don't know how they fix this, but I just want to read you a few lines from her story. She has a story in here about this guy, Steve Pachatek, was heading home on the CTA Blue Line last month. He saw three men beating up another passenger in the middle of a weekday afternoon. I'm 52, he says, and I've never seen anything like it. He's a flight attendant who lives in Chicago's Logan Square. He said he and other passengers were scared and jammed together in the opposite end of the car. He pushed the emergency call button, but got no response. At the Logan Square station, he approached the train operator, who asked which car had the problem, but he said there was nothing to do but call 911. So that's the CTA's response. Where was the problem? Okay, we'll call 911. And by this time, usually the people are gone who mugged you or beat you up. Wisniewski says reports of serious crimes on the CTA rail system doubled from 2015 through 2018, even as ridership declined and incidents of serious crime rose only slightly citywide. So in that 3 years, ending 2 years ago, I'll bet those are the last years for which they have records right now, crime goes down in the city. It nearly doubles on the CTA, even as ridership on the CTA declines slightly. And so then she has the do and don't do. Here's your guide to safety on the L. Be aware of your surroundings and watch your valuables. Switch rail cars at the next stop if you feel uncomfortable with something happening on the train in the car that you're in. Call 911 if there's an emergency. Alert the operator by pressing the red call button near the doors of a rail car. If you don't feel like you can safely say anything to the operator while the incident is happening, train operators will go to that car at the next station. I'm kind of curious if that's happened to you. Really? Does that happen? I hope so. It's still after the fact, but I hope so. 312-981-7200 is my number. You can text that, too. I'd like your call. It'll be safe. Try to sit, here's more advice, in the front car if you're traveling on the L during off hours. I hadn't thought about that, but that's where the conductor is. The person driving the train is in the front car, right? You right? Yeah. Not always on Metro, but on the L. Try to sit on the front car if you're traveling on the L during off hours, such as late at night. Even if a train operator can't do much personally to help during an emergency, it's best to be in the operator's car. They say violent criminals tend to like trains that are almost empty, while pickpockets like crowds. Here's some don't do's. Don't carry a purse over your shoulder. Ladies, I guess you're supposed to hold it in front of you. Don't keep valuables in a backpack. Don't keep your wallet in a backpack. I guess that makes sense. I see them unzipped a lot. Don't be a hero if you see criminal behavior like an assault or misbehavior like someone playing a loud radio, unless you're sure you can handle the situation. If you're traveling from the Cermak Chinatown station to the Roosevelt stop on the Red Line and try to fight a criminal, quote, you have a long way to go and you could take a really good beating. This is from the CTA. A lot of times heroes get hurt as bad as the first victim. Well, that's the saddest commentary you'll ever hear, right? Just hit the button, maybe call 911, and don't intervene. The spokesperson for the CTA noted that 1.5 million passengers travel each weekday on the CTA. That's the population of Philadelphia. Given the numbers, crime is relatively rare, and it's still the most affordable and often the most convenient way to get around the city. It's also, for some people, the only way to get around the city. Have you intervened on something like this? 312-981-7200. And my son sent me a funny video, speaking of funny things you can see on the internet, and that is of the synchronized NBA videos. If you just Google that, if you're on Twitter, you can see a lot of them pop up. But it's when the ball changes hands and everybody going one direction then turns and goes the other. Or maybe they're all going for a rebound in the same position. And it's just funny how often in the NBA, unscripted, guys will make the very same steps at the same time. It looks choreographed and it's really funny. Synchronized NBA videos. They're all the rage. Two Chicago mothers cut down before their time. The lingering impact when women are victims of gun violence and the wounds that may never heal. That's tonight on WGN-TV News at 9. Mary Wisniewski's piece in the Tribune today is picking up on what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks on this show. Increased violence on the CTA and not much to do about it. Nobody's got any real good solutions except, as her piece says today, here's some ways to maybe avoid it. Like if you're on a train car and something bad is happening, get off that train car. Thank you, Mary. And I appreciate the advice. But that's not much consolation to the people in that train car right now. We start with Casey. You're on WGN. Casey, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Good morning. Let's see. Back in the 80s, I lived across from headquarters of the police department at Roosevelt and State. I'm taking the red line from the south side to downtown. We get past the Cermak station. An older black gentleman and a younger white kid get into it. All of a sudden, the gun comes out. You know, the people are all huddled in the corner of the train. There's one shot. The train stops at Roosevelt Road, and the cops came in, the tops of the car, the windows of the car, the front, the back of the car. One of the cops put a .357 Magnum to my head, not knowing who was the culprit. And I'm like, ended up going to the police department. And unfortunately, the kid that caused the problem is the one that went to jail. But they were giving the poor black fella the hardest time, and he was a victim. So that stuff was happening in as much in the 80s as it is today.
And they haven't figured it out. But, my wish, Casey, is that they just hire more people. Get more guards on the damn trains.
Yeah, especially like Metra, the train, what do you call those, the conductors?
Yeah, the ticket takers.
They should have, they should be stacked up like the police are, the bulletproof vest. They should be sent to training on how to use guns. And, why not? I mean, unfortunately, we're there, but the safety and security of all, I think anyone should. We should definitely have people, at least the ticket takers at the stations, the train guards, all of them should be trained and have bulletproof vests, Is it sad? Yeah, sort of, but it's the way we are today, and maybe things will be curbed. I don't know.
Thanks for calling, Casey. I appreciate you listening.
Have a great day.
I got this email from a listener last week. So, John, good listening to your podcast, as I do every week. I believe he's a Mincing Rascals fan, and the Rascals talked about this, too. Bertrand didn't want to talk about it, but I did, and the Rascals rascaled up.
Long time we talked.
Steve was anxious to get onto like one topic he really wanted to talk about, and I'm going through all of these things. He goes, you've got to be kidding me.
The CTA was formed in...
We began our discussion with the advancement of the wheel. And moved from there. But this guy says that he is a police administrator, let's say. So he did some back-of-the-envelope calculations. And he said at 24 hours a day, 365 days a week, and that's what I want, to cover the 145 train platforms reported by the CTA website at a minimum wage of $15 an hour, to have a person standing a post on each train platform all day, every day would cost $25.4 million. That assumes no meal or restroom breaks, no vacation time, no sick time. You'd have to hire more people to cover those. And no supervisors overseeing the shift operators. That's just the man on the ground, $25 million a year.
At $15 an hour, which isn't realistic.
It's probably going to be three times that amount. Say double that, so you're looking at $50, $75 million. I'd be glad to discuss further if you like. Thank you, Matt. I'll call you soon. John's on line two. You're on WGN. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, good. Listen, I read the article, and of course, Mr. Steele of the CTA says that the train conductors, that's not going to happen. That was part of the article. He said, no, that's not going to happen. But shouldn't that call button trigger an automatic police response?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
I mean, you push the button, it goes to the train operator. Train operator puts in a call to either CTA security or the police. We got a problem on a car. Meet us at the next station.
Yeah. I don't know why that doesn't happen.
Yeah, or the train stops before it hits the station, so the suspects can't get off. Police are at the station. I was riding downtown years ago. I used to go downtown to work, and I was riding home from work, and a guy gets on a car, sits down next to a woman with a baby, starts talking to her, making friends, blah, 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 blah. all of a sudden, police get on, and they go right to this one man, and they said, come with us. What? Yeah, you just robbed a FedEx box.
Really?
The police were at the station, at the next station, and they nailed this guy. Why can't we have that kind of response when there's a violent incident on the CTA, just using that call button?
That was Metroid that you were on, or CTA?
No, that was CTA. That was the L.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, I appreciate it. Go ahead, John, finish that thought.
No, yeah, so that you know, if they can have that kind of, if it can't be the police, it can be CTA security, because these are guys who are trained, they have the vests, they have the Rottweilers. You know, the CTA security could meet the car or meet the train at the next station.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
All right, John, thanks for the phone call.
Instead of pushing a call button that goes nowhere.
Well, I want to believe in the institutions around me. I believe that the CTA is aware of it. They're trying to do a good job, and they're not lying to us, that those call buttons really do something. But it's frustrating if you don't get a response. I was on Metra one time, and the difference between Metra and the CTA is that Metra, you get on the train, and then they take your ticket. So there has to be somebody going up and down the Metra train. At least that's the way it was when I was taking it in from LaGrange. I presume that's the way it still works, right, Steve?
Yeah, except I think Illinois Central, you put your ticket through a turnstile.
To get in, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, at least on the Burlington Northern, I'm sure it's this way. I know it's this way. They take your ticket when you get on the train. So there has to be somebody going up and down, which means that if you sit in the top of the train car and lean into the window, he might not notice you and you get a free ride. But that hardly ever happens. And if you're sleeping, bam, 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 they hit their metal ticket puncher against the metal rail, and you wake up. Ticket, please. Very expensive if you don't have your pre-purchased ticket. Boy, do they nick you if you're paying with cash on the Metro line. But the point is, there's a human being that will canvas top to bottom every single car. Now, I don't know how practical that is on the L. I understand the differences. Some of the stops are very near.
Well, it's not practical. You know it's not practical. I mean, you're on a CTA car jammed in like a fish in a sardine can.
A guy couldn't even get from one end to the other. I guess I'm not asking somebody to literally walk up and down it, but boy, if they were on some of the cars some of the times, more of the cars more of the times, I'd feel a lot better about it. Al, you're on WGN. What did you want to say, Al? Good morning.
Hi, John. Well, I kind of echo what the previous caller said, because I recall in the 70s and 80s, the cops used to have two-man teams with dogs patrolling the cars. In fact, one of the first cases I ever handled as an attorney was a guy who robbed somebody on the Green Line, and, you know, within a couple stops, the cops caught him. I mean, and they caught him with the goods on him. And the victim ID'd him. So there used to be a huge presence of police and dogs on the CTA. They can't be everywhere.
No.
But the patrols know the patrol guys know where the problems are.
Yeah.
And they weren't just standing around; they were actively riding the rails.
And there's some people who are quote-unquote security guards these days, and God bless you if you are, but some of them are very young, some of them are very old, some of them are females who I don't think could handle large males, some of them look like people who are wearing a windbreaker that says security, and I don't envy them for the business they might get themselves involved in. I don't want just a windbreaker. I want somebody who is in charge. It's 10:26. It's President's Day. Happy President's Day to you, Thomas Jefferson. We say hi to him after 10:30. Elif, we've got 3 more minutes here. Is that right? Before we get into the news? Steve will do the news. By the way, Steve, when is Thomas Jefferson coming to Chicago?
September 26th, John.
Adam, how do you know that?
I'm going to Sweden then.
You can't join us?
No.
I got a text from Lou Manfredini, our Mr. Fix-It. That's on a Saturday, and we always do the shows like on a Saturday near the election. And usually at 11 in the morning or 1 in the afternoon, it's never convenient for Mr. Fix-It Lou Manfredini. a regular listener to this show and friend of ours. He just sent me a text saying, this will be great. I'll be there at 2. Do the show at 2. Do it at 4. Lou wants a later show. Lou, you are talking to the wrong person. I'm just the hired gun here. If you want the show later in the day, call Lou Manfredini. Maybe if there's enough of you, we'll push it back. But I think right now we're thinking 11 a.m. I think 11 a.m. is a better time. Unless you're doing a radio show at 11 a.m. But you get up, you have a sandwich, some coffee, whatever it is you have for breakfast. You go to the show at 11. You get out at 1.
It's like a brunch.
And then you can go to lunch afterwards, start a boozy brunch late if you like. Maybe you meet your friends for a late breakfast like at, 10, and then you go to the 11 o'clock show. I just think that you still have half of your Saturday left. The only person it's more convenient for is Lou Manfredini if we do it at 2 or 3 in the afternoon. So Lou's going to ride me about that for a while. Can I say one thing about boozy brunches before we go into the newsroom?
Sure.
Well, Brenda and I went to a late lunch last night. We went to see the movie. Then we went to I don't know what you call it, but at about 4 o'clock, we went out to eat.
Early bird special.
That'd be your afternoon tea.
There were still some boozy brunchers at this restaurant.
Wow.
And I don't mind you having a boozy brunch, and I don't mind you making a day of it. And I'm sure the restaurant doesn't mind either. But if by 4 o'clock you're still there and you're that loud, it's time for you to go home now.
I've never understood a boozy brunch.
Really?
No.
You get yourself a mimosa, the bottomless mimosa, and away you go.
You go home, you fall asleep.
Yeah, how do you make it through the rest of the day?
You do not. No, the
day's over.
The boozy brunch is a day you're not going to have. The boozy brunch is you get up, you put on comfortable clothes, you go to some place kind of hip, and then you eat and drink with your friends, and then you go home and you nap.
What was your movie?
Casablanca.
Oh.
Very fun. But here's my point.
You know they streamed that.
So anyway, not on the big...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's a big screen. It's a beautiful thing. So, but the volume coming out of this six-top or eight-top of people was really insane. And I know if you're all at your friend's house or if you're at a ball game, that kind of volume is fun. But because you've been drinking all day and it's boozy brunch, doesn't give you license to be screaming and laughing. I know I sound like a boomer here, but literally the whole restaurant is turning and looking at this table. And they're just having a gay old time. And nobody in the restaurant management at the time felt empowered enough to go up to them and say, folks, you're going to have to bring it down. But that happens a lot, or happens often enough, that when I get to be king, we will seek a solution to it. Let's put it that way. A bunch of young ladies are here with David Hochberg, who have the... Wait. David,
so you had to shush Hochberg, right?
Listen to 5 randomly selected names of young ladies who are... What ages are we looking at here, Hawk?
11 and 12.
11 and 12. So this is your daughter.
My daughter's Natalie.
Let's just walk each of them up to your microphone.
My mic, okay.
And ladies, one at a time, tell us what your names are. Ready, set, go.
I'm Natalie.
Natalie.
I'm Maddie.
Maddie.
I'm Danielle.
Danielle.
I'm Echo.
Echo.
I'm Shayla.
Shayla.
And Sloan was sick, and Sloan couldn't make it. And I'm David Hochberg in for the Father of the Year nomination for schlepping him around. Yeah, we're heading to B96, John, which kind of trumps WGN in all due respect.
No, it does not.
For 11 and 12-year-olds.
Well, in that case, it absolutely does.
But thank you for letting us interrupt your show. Goodbye.
Good to see you, Mr. Hochberg.
See you later,
Listen
buddy.
For him Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. here on WGN. So happy President's Day to you all, too. The third president of the United States joins us on WGN Radio. His name is Thomas Jefferson. President Jefferson, this is John Williams. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Good day to you, citizen.
And happy President's Day. I guess President's Day wasn't a thing when you were around, huh?
No, there was a movement to get me to acknowledge my birthday so that it could be celebrated during my presidency from 1801 to 1809. But I refused to divulge that information because I didn't think it was in our interest in a republic like ours to aggrandize our presidents as if they were kings or dictators or something.
Wait, so they wanted a President's Day celebrating you during your lifetime on your birthday?
Yes, not necessarily a President's Day, but a day of thanks and acknowledgement of my birth. There was already some acknowledgement of George Washington's birthday, and I felt that that was a mistake also, even though he was a very great man. You know, we're a democracy. The people are sovereign, and anytime you create a sort of cult of the executive, or a sense that the executive is an exalted being who deserves special praise, you're forgetting the very philosophy, the very principle of self-government.
When is your birthday?
Well, I will tell you now, but only because so much time has passed. It is April 13th, 1743.
April 13th, 1743. Well, that would have been kind of fun, but do you think that it's going down the wrong path if we make too much out of the chief executive, huh?
Yes. Now, in your time, you have something that you call President's Day, and it covers all 45 of them, so it's not as egregious an error as it would be to have the President's Day of John Adams or the President's Day of James Monroe, and singling out any single president, except possibly George Washington would, I think, be a mistake. But a generalized acknowledgement that presidents are an important feature of the Constitution doesn't trouble me as much as it would if it were my own birthday.
I must say, you may be on to something. And it's not just the current president. Barack Obama used executive powers at great length during his terms as well. But the president today is, I would say, in some ways, more powerful than the Congress. But in theory, they're supposed to be equal branches.
And not necessarily even equal, citizen. The Constitution has three articles about the basic structure of our national government. Article 3 is about the judicial branch. Article 2 is about the executive branch. But Article 1, the chief and first article of the Constitution, is about the legislative branch. And the legislative branch should be first among equals because it's the one that leans most heavily on the actual population, on the actual will of the people. The executive administers laws but does not make them. And the judiciary should be by far the weakest of the three branches of the national government. So the Founding Fathers in Philadelphia in 1787 intended legislative supremacy, and particularly the House of Representatives, because that's the one that is closest to the people.
And I would say we almost have it exactly the opposite now. You could easily argue that the most important body of government in America today is the Supreme Court, followed closely by the presidency, followed closely by the Senate. Not that the Senate's real popular right now, but look at the power they've exercised. And lastly, the House of Representatives. It's, I would say, upside down, Mr. President.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, of course. I dislike the judicial branch of the federal government because these are nine unelected, unaccountable, and unimpeachable beings who sit outside the political process and tell us what laws they think are acceptable and what laws they wish to strike down. If you read your Constitution, you will not see that power granted in the third article of the Constitution to the Supreme Court or the judiciary. But I think it troubles me even more to think that the executive in your time would be more powerful than the legislative. You know the theory. We're the people, people with a capital P. We don't govern ourselves through pure democracy because our population is too large, and that's an inconvenient system. So we created a constitution that uses representative democracy. In other words, we send agents to the national capital to do our bidding. That's the primary branch of government. That's the branch that allows the people, in some sense, to govern themselves. But once you create a president, if he goes beyond his constitutional limits and starts to do executive orders and to behave like a king or a monarch or a dictator, now you're returning to the system that we had a revolution to get rid of in 1776.
Well, I think that the remedy for that, at least in principle, is impeachment. What was the thinking in the 18th century about the power to throw the president out?
Elections matter. You know, thanks to James Madison, who went to the Constitutional Convention with something called the Virginia Plan, we have quadrennial presidential elections. In other words, every fourth year, you either get a new president or you return the incumbent to office. And so in our day, not much was at stake. And so we could wait for 4 years to get rid of a bad president, say like John Adams or John Quincy Adams. But the founding fathers, when they met in Philadelphia, and I was not there, I was in France, when they met, they said, well, there may be times when we can't wait 4 years or 3 years or 2.5 years. There may be times when a president's behavior is so abusive to the very idea of an American republic that we have to step in. And so they set the bar very high that the House of Representatives, through a majority, could indict the president or impeach him,
right,
but that the Senate would require a two-thirds majority to evict him. And so this is a special tool to be used only in the most extraordinary emergencies to get rid of somebody that we can't afford to leave in office for until the next election.
I wish you guys had anticipated how partisan the Senate would be, or the House for that matter, but it's extraordinary if even one person, and it's only happened once, that one person voted against the party and these issues. So it's not like the senators are all sitting there impartially judging the viability of a presidency. They just go with whatever the party is. And if their party aligns with the president's party, then you never get an impeachment. You never get a conviction, if you will.
The founding fathers made a terrible mistake in not anticipating the growth of party politics. They actually believed that the United States, as the world's foremost experimental republic, would be nonpartisan. And if that had been the case, then the Senate would be a senior advisory group of wise individuals who had a Commonwealth interest rather than any narrow partisan interest. And they would be called upon in an impeachment trial to sit as a jury, just as citizens are called for jury duty, and they come with, they try to be as objective and impartial as they possibly can be. So not anticipating the rise of parties was maybe the fundamental mistake, both of sociology and of political theory, of the founding fathers. And I was partly responsible for the rise of parties because we believe that the Federalists who created the Constitution were crypto-monarchists and would have to be retired. So I do think that that's a mistake that you should adjust. You know, you should try to clarify the next time you tear up your Constitution and revise it.
Yeah. I'll run that by everybody. I'm kind of intrigued by the idea that the guy that's ahead right now, well, it's 10:42. Do you have another minute, Mr. Jefferson?
Well, certainly, citizen. I've been retired for more than 200 years.
Thomas Jefferson's on the phone. He's got a couple minutes. Do you have a question or comment for him too, by the way? An observation you'd like him to wax on or wax off? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. President Thomas Jefferson's on the phone. He's coming back to Chicago to have our annual pre-election conversation September 26th. We're going to be in Downers Grove at the Tivoli Theater. You can't get tickets yet. I want you to circle that on your calendar, though. I think this will be an extraordinary year, obviously, and a most interesting election. And what do the founding fathers say? And as we get closer and closer, I think this air feels fresher and fresher, doesn't it? So 312-981-7200. You can call or text. And I see the line's starting to fill up right now. So jump on and join us now on WGN. 312-981-7200 is the telephone number. Thomas Jefferson's on the phone. and how often do you get to say that? The third president of the United States will join us again in Chicago. He'll be in Downers Grove at the Tivoli Theater September 26th. Now, I'm not putting him on now because you're about to run out and buy tickets. You can't, but it's President's Day, which I guess technically honors all the presidents, but is, I guess, noteworthy for honoring Lincoln and Washington. I don't mean to exclude you in that company, Mr. Jefferson, but I think when you see people about town honoring presidents today, we'll see Lincoln beards and Washington wigs today.
I don't mind them. A bit, citizen. I never took myself very seriously as the third president of the United States because I believe that the people are sovereign. And I, in fact, am the only president who balanced the budget in a significant way. I devoted 73% of our annual revenues to debt retirement, to try to retire Alexander Hamilton's gift to the United States, the national debt.
It's funny you mention that because I'm just looking here at a story on Newsweek. The national debt increased over the last 3 years by $3 trillion.
I don't know what $3 trillion is, but it sounds ruinous. You know, we ought to have a balanced budget amendment. I wished that they had done that in Philadelphia in 1787. And you could have a clause that said in the time of international emergency where the very survival of the United States is in jeopardy, there might be a small national debt to be paid off as quickly as possible. But in times of peace and prosperity, there's absolutely no excuse to run deficits because it's a way of taxing our grandchildren without their consent.
Well, you said it before that you think it's bad that we have these two very partisan political parties, and you cop to the fact that you are somewhat responsible for that yourself. But here we've got the Democrats that do whatever the Democratic leaders say and the Republicans doing whatever the Republican leaders say. One of the candidates, though, that's sure got some traction right now is Bernie Sanders, and he identifies as a Democratic socialist. Should we care as Americans if a communist or a socialist or, you know, pick it, some other bizarre party, if would the founding fathers feel betrayed if we had a socialist president of the United States?
Well, socialism, as you understand it, did not really yet exist. It was just being sort of philosophized about in France and in Scotland during my time abroad between 1784 and 1789. And I must say that I do have some small socialist leanings, because I believe that under certain circumstances, wealth and property must be redistributed so that every human being has a modest chance at prosperity and real work. But I wouldn't call myself a socialist in the modern sense of the term. If the Constitution is doing well, the people shouldn't be too concerned, because a president has so little power under the Constitution. The yeah. power is in the legislative branch. And so if this person you're speaking about were elected and he proposed a series of socialist policies, the Congress of the United States could simply refuse to enact them.
Well, that's the way I feel about a lot of this stuff. In fact, you know, say what you want about the current president, nothing happens in theory without the acquiescence of the Congress. But we seem to have gotten an end around that. It seems like the president has so much power these days, even without the Congress's consent, you know?
I do understand that. And so that really takes me back to something that I wished to say a moment ago, and that is that if you've had 45 presidents and you have never impeached and evicted a single one of them, I can't imagine that a few of them haven't deserved eviction. And therefore, the impeachment bar is set too high. You need to set it high, of course, but you can't set it so high that it never happens. If it hasn't happened in 200 years, it's effectively a nullity.
I don't know how we would do that. I get your point. But I mean, if the problem, though, is not that the House or the Senate will ever act impartially, there'll never be anything but party bearers, then how do we get around it? Who would we ask? The Supreme Court? All 50 states? I wonder how we would actually get a sort of fair trial for a president.
Well, I think the answer is public education. If I may offer a criticism of your era, you seem to have abandoned civics in your public schools and ethics, too. And certainly you have abandoned any realistic sense of what a republic is. In a republic, the citizens are crabby. They're vigilant. They're watching government like a hawk. They're suspicious of every act of government. They want to know, how are you spending my money? How do I know you're spending it wisely? What powers are you aggrandizing to yourself that were not contemplated in the Constitution? How do I know that my liberties are being protected when I entrust you with power? And if I ever feel that you are abusing that power, even in a modest way, I'm going to check you and, if necessary, evict you as a ruffian from office. Unless the American people have that attitude that they must protect themselves from the runaway nature of government, they cannot possibly live in a republic. So I think the answer is not the Senate, although the Senate should be nonpartisan. The answer is public education in civics and ethics and how the Constitution's mechanisms actually work.
That's a good point. Although we were busy this weekend. The NBA All-Star game was this weekend, and so we're kind of distracted from the sorts of things you're talking about.
Well, then you deserve your fate, because the people alone can protect themselves from oppression and tyranny. And if the people ever go to sleep, those energies of aggrandizing power in the hands of the few or the one will certainly take place. There's no evidence from human history of this not happening if the people are not eternally vigilant, like watchdogs, worrying every moment of their lives that government is somehow going to misuse their money, take them into wars of no great necessity, or to build its own authority at the expense of freedom and the happiness of mankind.
Did you feel that way even about the founding fathers themselves?
Yes, I did. I felt that the government of George Washington, who was a great man and someone that I revere, didn't really trust the people, that he wanted to be entrusted by them to be a sort of patriarch of the country, a philosopher prince, and he was very thin-skinned and did not want to be challenged in any of the things that he did. And John Adams was worse. You know, he carried a ceremonial sword around, and he wanted titles of nobility for himself and other national officers, and they held levies and so on. This was all nonsense, a kind of echo of the tyrannies and the monarchies of Europe. So they didn't yet understand it. It wasn't until Andrew Jackson, whom I didn't particularly admire, by the way, that the government began to listen more fully to the people and to follow their whims.
Thomas Jefferson's on a phone line. Now we go to your texts and your calls. 847 said, can we please, exclamation points, nominate Thomas Jefferson for president again? This man gives me hope. But you've served your two terms, so we couldn't have you again, right?
Well, probably not. But, you know, if someone will raise 250 million pounds sterling, I will come out of retirement.
Let's go to Demetra. Is it Demetra on line one? You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. How are you both?
Good.
I just wanted to say that your guest is quite correct. People need to be more politically passionate here in the United States, and we're not. We also need to know about our Constitution, which stated that the government is by the people, for the people, and when it no longer represents the people, they have a right to revolution, which, of course, we don't do nowadays. But they do in Europe, and it's bloodless. They call for early elections. And it's just, you know, like they do in England and everywhere else, cut and dried. We borrowed from Europe to create our government. We need to look there again. Instead, we sit here, we muddle, and we go on, and our, you know, everything has become a mess. On that note, I leave you, and keep up the wonderful work.
Thanks, Demetra. President Jefferson, you want to comment on that?
Yes, two quick comments there. First of all, I agree with her, of course. I like a little rebellion now and then. It's as important in the political world as thunderstorms are in the natural world. You know, they clear the air. And I think we should be careful not to have a revolution of some sort every generation or two. It doesn't need to be blood in the streets, but it needs to be the people rising up and taking back their government from the opportunists and the careerists and the cronies and so on. But she also talked about perhaps adopting a more European model. I can't answer that, but I can tell you that I advocated a constitutional revision every generation. I worked that out to be about 19 years. And if you did that, then you would correct the mistakes of the founding fathers, and you would update the Constitution to address the actual issues, technologies, demographics, geopolitical situations, and so on, of the world you live in, and not try to hide behind a Constitution that was written in a 3-mile-per-hour world by James Madison and others.
Thomas Jefferson was your third president, and we could use a little more of this. He'll be on stage with us at the Tivoli Theater. It's down the road now, not until September 26th in Downers Grove. But on President's Day, nice to hear his voice, and you'll hear it again between now and then. And then on stage, so circle 9:26 on your calendar. And nice to hear your voice this morning, Mr. Jefferson. Thanks for giving us some of your time.
Thank you. I'm returning to my garden. You know, it's planting season in Virginia. I don't think that's quite true in your Chicago.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you talk smack about the weather. I'm letting you go now. Goodbye, sir.
Thank you, citizen.
That's Thomas Jefferson, your third president, joining us soon. So happy President's Day again. Thomas Jefferson joining us, and always a pleasure to have him on. Do you remember the other day we were talking to Barry Manilow? He's got a new CD out. And Barry said all kinds of fun things. We just had a swell time. And a guy calls in, and a caller said, this is so funny. Do you have the audio from this guy? Okay, so listen to this guy calling in when Barry Manilow was on our show the other day. By the way, Bob's on line one and had a question for you about another one of your songs. Bob, you're on WGN with Barry Manilow. Hi.
Hey, Barry Manilow, this is Bob Erickson. My daughter was born in 1975, and we heard your song, Mandy.
Uh-huh.
However, I made a mistake of calling her Mendy. So her name now is Mendy Ann Erickson instead of Mandy.
How did you screw that up, Bob?
Really, Bob?
I know.
Her name is, well, I mean, it's a lovely name, but did you think I was singing Oh Mendy?
Yeah, oh, I really did.
You think my Brooklyn accent made that happen?
So, technically, this is your fault, Barry Manilow.
I have to listen to it again. Do I sound like I'm singing Oh Mendy?
All right, Producer Olive, grab the song. We'll settle that here right once and for all right now. Thank you for the call, Bob. That's a wonderful story.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, Barry.
Our best to your daughter, Mendy. Mendy sent me an email the other day, and she didn't hear that but wanted to hear it. And she asked that we actually send her a clip of that. I wonder how many people have done that. Named their kids after a name in the song. How many people listening to us right now?
You mean correctly, not incorrectly.
Either way.
Yeah.
But boy, incorrectly would be, I think, a real thin slice of the pie.
No.
But I suppose there are plenty of people who are named after somebody in a song. Are there some Mandys out there named after that song? And are there some Mendys? M-E-N-D-I-E.
Some dogs named Boo?
I'll bet there's a lot of that. Dogs named after, well, I don't know if there's that many dog songs.
Is it Me and You and a Dog Named Boo?
Boo, sure. I remember that. Traveling
on Los Lobos, I think. No, not Los Lobos. I have to look it up.
A rat's named Ben.
That's a bizarre one because
if
you don't know the Michael Jackson song, it really is about a rat, and it actually worked in the movie. You were kind of rooting for the rats.
Oh, gosh, it's such a pretty song, and it was like about a rat.
How does it go, Ben? Most people would turn you away.
Yeah,
with a friend to call my own, I'll never be alone.
Blech.
You got a friend in me, and it's about a rat. Back to Mendy for a second. She's on the phone now. Hey, Mendy, this is John Williams. You're on WGN. Hi, Mendy.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys?
Happy, it's not your birthday. Happy Mendy Day to you. Happy President's Day, Mendy.
Well, thank you. My birthday was just actually the 11th, but thank you. I appreciate that.
Happy belated birthday. So, did you know your dad was going to call in?
No, I had no idea.
And then he told you about it.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm kind of curious, though, how old are you? Because you sound very young, but that song was some time ago.
Yes, I know. It's my voice. I was born in 1975, so I just turned 45.
Okay. Well, then you're relatively young still. But so, that's right. That was a hit in 75, right? And that's your birth year.
Yeah, that was my birth year. So I know my dad had called in and wanted to tell Barry Manilow the whole story, which was awesome. And that's why I reached out to you guys, because I wanted to see if I could hear my dad speaking to Barry. But yeah, I was supposed to be, actually my name was supposed to be Beth Ann. My mom had it all figured out. And when my dad was on the way to the hospital and heard Barry's song, Mandy, he switched it up a bit. And my mom was like, just exhausted. She's like, sure, do whatever you want. And so I was not a Beth, and I wasn't a Mandy. My name is Mendy.
Your dad heard it on the way to the hospital that day?
Yes, that's correct. He heard it on the way to the hospital.
That's funny. Wow.
So was there a time when he told you that he mistakenly named you Mendy?
Yeah, they all made it like my famous story, you know, because even my aunts and uncles, they were all ready for a Beth Ann, and here I come home from the hospital, and my name is Mendy, M-E-N-D-I-E. So everyone was just, they always tell me the story, and my dad tells me the story. It's just an ongoing joke, I guess.
But it must be, that must have been a holy cow, what did I do moment. Not, it's a lovely name either way, and you're a swell person, so it really doesn't matter what we name our kids. But he must have had a real head slap where he went, oh no, it's Mandy. Too late.
I think he knew already, but my mom was the one who was like, what did we do? What happened to Seth? Like, she was just so out of it after giving birth to me that when she came around, she was just like, oh my God, what do we do? What do we just do? So,
well,
craziness.
I suddenly lost my train of thought here. I was going to ask you something else about that. Mendie.
Yeah.
So do you have a middle name too?
It's still stayed Ann. So it's Mendie Ann Erickson.
We have a rule at my house, Mendy, and that is whoever has the babies gets to name the babies. It would seem to me that having to carry a child for 9 months and then bear a child should give you ultimate authority over the name of the child. So if Dad's driving in and he's doing Copa, Coca-Cabana, or Mandy or something, you know, it's like, yeah, hey, I'm happy for you, Jack, but it's my kid that I'm going to name. And so...
Yeah.
So my sons are named Grant and Griffin, and I love those names, and I love those boys, but they were names Brenda came up with, not me. So Mendy, yeah, okay.
That would be me.
But by the way,
I appreciate you guys having me on. I mean, it's kind of a funny follow-up to that whole thing with the name.
Have you met many other Mendys? You must be unique that way.
No, I have not. I have not. So that is, and it's always funny when I give my name, they're always like, is it Mindy? Is it Mandy? I'm like, no, it's like Wendy, but with an M and an IE.
That's the best I can do for you.
Yeah.
All right, Mindy. Well, congratulations to Bob and Mindy and everybody else over there. You sound like lovely people. It's been nice getting to talk to you.
Aw, thank you. You too. Have a good one, you guys.
That's Mindy, a.k.a. Mandy, a.k.a. Beth Ann. It's 11:14. Did you get named after somebody in a song?
Grandma, your latkes are delicious. Why aren't you eating?
Oh, Dickie, Grandma said, need the money for a new business.
Really?
Yeah, so Grandma sell her Grateful Bread 8-track collection.
Grateful Bread?
Yes, band of bakers from Vilnius. Very famous.
Grandma, get a commercial loan from First American Bank.
First American?
Rates are low, and you'll work with one loan officer all the way. What's your new business?
Grandma go into pot business.
Pot?
Oh, Dickie, is nothing like good pot.
You know about pot?
Why you think Grandma's goulash so yummy? It's pot.
Pot? Oh, you mean cookware?
Yeah. These pot made in Lithuania, and Grandma sell them here.
Oh, I see. Well, a First American commercial loan can make that happen. You'll get approval quickly and be in business.
Ah, oh, sounds good, Dickie.
See, I thought you meant pot like...
Oh, get real, Dickie. Have some more latkes made with pot.
Delicious.
First American, the bank that does more for your money. Visit firstambank.com. Call 847-952-3700. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
35% of Fortune 500 companies are family-owned, and family firms make up the majority of all businesses. In business with family, the key to success, or oil and water. Our expert tells us at noon, the Wintrust Business Lunch. With me, Jisoo Key, on 720 WGN.
It says here, so I'll read it, two Chicago mothers cut down before their time. The lingering impact when women are victims of gun violence and the wounds that may never heal. That's tonight on WGN TV News at 9. When you look back at 2019, what stands out for you? If the answer to that is depression or despair or hopelessness, remember it's a new year and a fresh start awaits. It's time for you to conquer your depression. Live your best life. Anesthesiologist Dr. Bal Nandra uses ketamine to treat major depression. Ketamine is safe in lower doses, quickly relieves depression and chronic pain, can also provide relief from anxiety and PTSD. Ketamine's been called one of the greatest advancements in mental health. In fact, the Cleveland Clinic ranked it in its top 10 medical innovations list. Many antidepressants are not effective or have bad side effects. Ketamine treatments from Dr. Nandra could reduce or eliminate your need for those drugs. Most people find relief in just a few hours or days. Treatment involves 6 IV infusions over 2 weeks in a private monitored setting. Schedule your free, no obligation consultation. Call 844-9-IV-MEDS. 844-9-IV-MEDS or go to ketaminechicago.com. KETAMINECHICAGO.com. About the show so far, Plenty of you want Thomas Jefferson to run for office again. John, I am named after a song. I am Ramona. Brandy's after the Looking Glass Brandy. John, I named my dog Maggie after the Rod Stewart song. So on and so forth. Yeah, lots of them. By the way, Mary Wisniewski's on a phone line. She's the Tribune's transportation writer. Hi, Mary. It's John Williams. How are you today?
Hi, John. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. You aren't named after a Mary and a song, are you?
No, though I did name one of my daughters, Lucy, after the Beatles song.
See, that's you're just talking to somebody named Mendy after the Barry Manilow song Mandy. Her dad misheard it on the way to the hospital and named her Mendy. But I'll bet that's not uncommon. I'll bet a lot of people are named after names and songs, right?
Oh, yeah. And some nice, unique names out there.
I'm reading your piece in the Tribune today, CTA, with CTA crime in the spotlight. Here's how writers can stay safe. And then you talked to somebody at the CTA, and they gave you some common sense advice. I must tell you, Mary, I talked about this earlier in the show, and I was a little frustrated with the fact that what you can do is all happens after something bad has happened or has started to happen.
Well, some of that, you have to, but also you can prepare yourself for not being a victim. And that's things like being aware of your surroundings. If you're ever on a CTA train, you see people who seem to be just asking to be robbed. They got their purses open, they got their headphones in, they're not paying attention. And so that's one of the big things you can do, is just to be aware of your surroundings. And don't be looking at your phone while you're by a door as the train is coming into the station, because people can grab it and jump right off, and then you can't catch them.
You also said don't be a hero if you see criminal behavior. And what they're saying is the stop can be such a long trip from one stop to the next, that if you intervene...
Right.
On a victim's behalf, and you start to get into the fracas, you might get beat up worse than the first guy.
Right, exactly. And the person I talked to, who was a retired mass transit lieutenant, Bob Angone, said that unless you're sure you can handle it, if you're a great big guy, you know, and you have some experience dealing with these sorts of things, you know, you might be of some help. But someone like me probably wouldn't be of much help, and I'd just get hurt. So.
Which I understand. I mean, there's no point in both of you getting hurt, but that's also a real sad commentary. If you see somebody getting beat up, just sit there and wait until somebody else can do something about it. And those are confined spaces. There's no way to escape.
There they are. Well, one thing you can do is you can push the call button. You can also, if you don't want to talk out loud, there's a tip line that you can get through with the Chicago Police, where you can send a description of what's happening. That's www.cpdtip.com. And you can go in there and, you know, let them know what's going on. And the other thing you can do is switch rail cars, and then you can talk more openly, and you can call 911. They recommend that when it's a violent situation, to call 911 first and foremost, rather than trying to get a hold of a CTA official, because those folks aren't, you know, they're not trained as police officers. And so you want to get the police out there as fast as you can.
Are we in danger of making too much out of this recent uptick or celebrated cases of violence on the L?
Well, I think it's important to realize that, as the CTA points out, they have 1.5 million passengers each weekday, and crime is relatively rare on the CTA. So I'm not going to stop riding the CTA, and I don't think people should. It's the best way to get around in a lot of circumstances, but I do think that people have to pay attention, and they have to be aware that some of these things are happening, and try not to be a victim.
Well, I'm frustrated, Mary, and I'm critical, and maybe I should tone it down a little bit, because I'm impressed by the idea that the CTA's population of ridership each day is equivalent to the population of Philadelphia. And I'm not mad at Philadelphia because somebody gets mugged once in a while, but
right.
It just seems to me like I'm not seeing the kind of show of force I might in downtown Philadelphia. I want them to at least act like they're taking it more seriously.
Well, the police and the CTA say that they are planning to, they're taking action after these high-profile incidents, that they told me they're working on a, quote, very robust transit safety plan, and they're going to announce it in the coming weeks. They've also told us at the Tribune that police plan to add in about 50 officers to trains between March 5th and Memorial Day weekend to beef things up. So we're hoping that that's going to do some good. We've also had an increase in arrests since the beginning of the year.
You said from March 5th to Memorial Day?
Yeah, so May 27th.
Yeah, how about Labor Day? I mean,
that's exactly the question that I had. Like, wait a minute, summer is the time when we're really going to have a problem. It might be that they're going to test this out and then see if they can add those forces permanently, because they did the same thing last year where they added about a little over 40 officers, and it was supposed to be temporary, but then they ended up adding them permanently. So they might be doing that again.
That is such a small response. So one of our listeners did a little math, figured out how many platforms there are. If you did three shifts, 8 hours each, somebody with a show of force at each platform for every day of the year, and paid them $15 an hour. And by the way, police officers get paid a lot more than that.
I don't think we'd have many people doing that kind of work if it was just $15
an hour. No, this is just hiring $15 an hour windbreakers, and God bless those people. I think sometimes we put those people with security on their jacket, and it's not fair to them, but there they are. Anyway, that would be $25 million a year. And I don't know that they want to throw that kind of coin at this problem, let alone the kind of coin it would really take. It'd be three, four times that amount.
Well, the other thing that was brought up by the union president that represents the train operators is that they want to bring the conductors back. It used to be that you had an operator on each train, but you also had a conductor that would walk through the train. And there's been an argument made that that would make things safer. It's something that happens on Metra now. You have a conductor walking through the train getting tickets, but you also see those conductors on the Metra trains, you know, telling people to get their feet off the seats, telling them to turn on their radio, basically telling them to act like a good citizen on the train. And I've heard the argument made that that is something that's lacking on the CTA, that we're kind of left to fend for ourselves out there.
Well, my friend Steve Bertrand is quick to point out, and he's right, that you couldn't do that on a CTA because you can't get from one end of the car to the other. We're so crowded.
You can't
traverse from one end of the train to the other. So I don't know how to get around that. To be honest with you, what I'm proposing is somebody on the platforms. I don't even put them in the train car, but if we could get some of them to ride the train once in a while, I'd be pretty happy about that, too.
Yeah, someone like an ambassador or someone who's out there making sure people behave themselves.
Yes.
They can be pretty. One of the good tips that I got from this retired lieutenant is to try to, when you're riding late at night on the L, to try to sit in the front car. Because even if the operator doesn't, you know, they don't have police training and maybe they might not be able to help you much individually, it's good to be there with somebody and not be alone. Violent criminals like empty trains.
And I can't bring a gun legally onto the train, right?
No, you cannot. But, there could be some awful kind. If you could, that could backfire in a way that you wouldn't like either. So
I understand that. I'm not a big advocate of that, but I know plenty of people think, well, that if that crowded car or even that semi-crowded car, if the bad guy thought one of these people may have concealed carry, maybe that would tone down the bad behavior, or maybe some people would be able to defend themselves or other people. Maybe a gun on the CTA isn't a bad idea.
Well, I don't know if a lot of the people who are committing these kinds of crimes, there's a lot of mental illness out there. There's a lot of people who don't seem to have any regard for their safety or other people's safety. And so, some of them do not seem to be deterred by the cameras. So I'm not sure what exactly would deter them. But I think that the idea of not being a hero would apply even in the case where you had a gun, because, you don't know what they could be producing or if they're quicker on the draw. I see some bad consequences coming out of that.
Well,
but I have heard that argument from readers, definitely.
That woman that attacked Machete Mike, the busker on the platform, was clearly mentally ill.
And she'd had multiple arrests, too.
40-plus. John, is your guest, I don't know if this is a doubting Thomas here, John, is your guest Mary a regular CTA passenger?
Excuse me, I'm a CTA. Yes, I'm definitely a writer.
Yeah, so this person is questioning whether or not you ride the L, if you know what you're talking about, and I think you do.
Oh, definitely, all the time.
Are you on the bus as often as you are on the train?
I'm on the buses once in a while, too, And the buses have not had it as big an issue with the crime increase, though they have had issues before, too. I've noticed a change on the trains. It used to be that someone was playing their radio that loud. Most of the time I could tell them, hey, could you turn it down, and they turn it down. I don't get that response anymore. I get them turning it up.
I don't know what it is, though, because it does seem like this. Most of these incidents, maybe it's just the volume of passengers, but most of these incidents do seem to be on the trains. And I don't know if there's a greater sense of anonymity and therefore an ability to get away with it. I can't make sense of it, but you don't hear about stuff like this on buses very much.
Yeah, there are crimes on buses, of course, and some of the crimes are directed against drivers. This is something that I had a conversation with the bus drivers union last year about, where people were hitting drivers with a package of frozen chicken in one case. They were threatening drivers, spitting at drivers, throwing soda at drivers. So that's another issue. I think the issue with the trains is that people can get off them very quickly. They can grab someone's phone from someone who's sitting near a door. They can grab their phone and take off down the platform as the train's leaving. And so I think that there's just there's some greater opportunities presented by the L.
So a couple of folks have said something like this, that we talk about 1.5 million a day on the L, on the CTA system, but that's 0.75 million really, because people tend to take the trip twice a day.
Right, back and forth.
So when we talk about, and I noticed the interim police superintendent did that. I think he made that mistake. He's counting rides as passengers. It's probably best to divide the number in half, right?
Right, and that about a little over half of those are riding on the bus, too.
Oh, really? Is it about 50-50?
We're talking about the whole system, right?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised to hear that. Okay, well, I'd be interested to see what they come up with. Mary Wisniewski, transportation writer for the Tribune. Her piece today is a little bit about the do's and don'ts to keep yourself safe if you're riding the CTA system. And maybe something in the next few weeks, Mary, they'll tell us what their plan is to make the L safer?
That's what we're waiting for, where I ask them to make sure they tell me as soon as they're ready to release their plan. So we'll keep you abreast on this.
Nice to hear you. Nice to read you. Thank you, Mary.
Okay, thank you, John. Take care.
Mary Wisniewski at the Tribune. If you don't already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper. Our news click, our daily web poll question at WGNradio.com over the weekend said, should Illinois ban cat and dog sales at pet stores? Steve Dale came bursting in here on Friday to tell us the news that Naperville had done so and that Illinois has a bill before it. It might be statewide illegal to sell a cat or a dog in a pet store. Do you see that very often? I don't know. At the pet store we go to, they're not selling. Actually, Elif said that they do. At that one on Halstead, do they sell cats in that pet store where we get our supplies?
Yes.
The cats in cages right there.
Mm-hmm.
That will be against the law if this bill goes through. And Steve Dale said it should, because where those cats and dogs come from are not good places. We asked you about that. 78% said, yep, it's part of the puppy mill and we need to stop it. Or the cat equivalent, I guess. And 22% said, no, those stores have better prices. And heck, a dog is a dog. If I want to get a dog, I'll go to the store and I'll buy me one. Stop making me go to other lengths. Our news click, that's at WGNradio.com. We'll come up with a new one, but I've got a whole bunch of questions for you after the news. On this President's Day, we do our Mega Monday Morning Quiz, sponsored by the folks at Mega Pros. So the Mega Monday Morning Quiz is a great story today. I don't know if you remember this kid, Steve Bertrand. We'll reintroduce ourselves to Ryan Morton, who used to listen to us and became an intern for us. And we'll provide the quiz after the news.
It is 39 degrees, 10 to make that 11:30 here in Chicago. Good morning. I'm Steve Bertrand. The news is sponsored by the hipandkneecenter.com. Searching for a suspect in the morning CTA shooting. First, a look at traffic. Here's Mary Vandeville.
And looking good on the Edens. Inbound on the Kennedy, though, about 45 minutes from O'Hare, 36 from the Edens, 20 in the Express. Some heavy delays in from Irving Park and outbound to O'Hare, 26 minutes. Outbound on the Eisenhower, some midday road work into Harlem. It's about 24 minutes out to Mannheim, 36 to 390, but inbound in pretty good shape till you get to Independence, then some backups there into the Jane Byrne interchange. The inbound side of the Stevenson from the Tri-State, it's about 18 minutes. Inbound on the Ryan, looking good. Inbound Bishop Ford, earlier accident, 159th has been cleared, along with an accident on the Tri-State southbound between Dundee and Lake. However, now there's a northbound accident at 75th that is blocking the two right lanes. Mary Vanderbilt, WGN Traffic Central.
The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, cloudy, milder today, rain coming into the area and will last into the overnight hours today, a high of 44, low tonight of 33, and then tomorrow, clouds decreasing, cooler, and a high of 36. 39 right now at O'Hare, midway 38, it is 38 at Oak Lawn and 35 degrees at Chicago's lakefront. Police say they are pursuing a person of interest in the shooting early this morning in the Jackson Tunnel between the red and blue lines. One person was killed, two others injured. The Cubs announced today their marquee network television deal has a deal with Hulu, but still nothing with Comcast. They're supposed to take air this weekend. The CDC says 4 months into the flu season, influenza has struck between 22 and 31 people in America. At least 12,000 have died. WGN Sports, the Bulls and Blackhawks are off. North Carolina is in South Bend to take on Notre Dame. Your money, no business news to report today. The markets are closed for President's Day. I'm Steve Bertrand on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
So listen to this, Steve Bertrand. It says in this email I got the other day, this is Ryan Morton. I'm the former WGN intern slash President's Day quiz giver starting way back in 2000. Which somehow does not feel like it was really 20 years ago. It's been a long time since I wrote to you. We've both had a lot of changes in that time. After 5 years working for the same guy I used to work for, Larry Nelson at WSPY in Plano, Illinois, I decided to change professions. I went to John Marshall Law School downtown, and I've been an attorney for more than 2 years now. I work out in Naperville. I also have a family with my first daughter entering the world just 5 months ago. So I remember this young man, and his name is Ryan, and I don't remember if he would call in and give us quizzes or if he became an intern, and that's when he's quizzes. But he's this young guy, and he would do presidential quizzes for us. He was a presidential scholar. That was his thing, and he was really good at presidential trivia. He was amazing. And then he became an intern. And he said, based on his experience here, that he wanted to go into broadcasting, which I wasn't real sure about. Ryan Morton. And I wasn't sure if that was a good idea. But he goes off to be a broadcaster. Son of a gun, works at the station that I used to work at. And then wisely gets out of broadcasting and becomes an attorney in Naperville. Been doing that for a couple of years. Married and has a kid. And I understand he's on line 7. Hey, Ryan, it's John. How are you?
Great, John. Thanks for having me on. I want to let Steve know, though, if he ever needs a Johnny on the spot in the Western Burbs, I'm still available.
All right, we'll look for you.
So if something's going on in April, say a quick call. You'll run over with a microphone and interview somebody.
Absolutely. You can't lose the newsman in me.
So how did it start out with you and us? Were you an intern and then started doing that stuff, or were you doing stuff for us just as a kid caller?
Actually, it started with Dean Richards when I was in fifth grade, so that's going back to 96, I guess, and I called him and asked him to challenge me to a President's Day quiz, and after all these years, I still remember all four questions and the two I got wrong, and after that, it took a few more years, but when I was a freshman in high school, then I got in touch with you, I forget how, and for 8 years then, you invited me on every President's Day so I could give a quiz to your listeners.
What were the six questions that Dean asked you all those years later?
Well, I remember that one of the ones I got right was James Buchanan was the only bachelor president.
Okay.
That was an easy one, for a fifth grader. I've been obsessed with presidents since I was in third grade, and so that's just my thing.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a campaign button tie right now at the office and George Washington socks, so I'm ready for this interview.
So has that still been a passion of yours then, Ryan? People know you as a president guy?
Yes, definitely. That and musicals. Those are my two calling cards, I guess.
And so then, it's one thing to be a broadcaster. It's a lot harder to be smart enough or tough enough to get through law school, but you went to John Marshall and got a law degree, huh?
I did. Yeah, it was a great decision. I love being a lawyer, and I only sometimes miss the news business.
What kind of law do you practice now?
I actually do mostly work with local governments, so my time covering all of those governmental agencies and sitting on the sidelines, I decided I wanted a more active role, so I now represent a lot of municipalities, school districts, fire districts.
By the way, Dave Ennett's just strolling into our studios. Hey, Dave Ennett.
Hey, John. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Dave. Good to hear you.
Nice to hear. So
he's all grown up.
So I knew Ryan when he was a student at Northwestern, right?
Correct.
And weren't you involved in doing a video with John and me when Northwestern was going to play Southern Illinois?
Yes, yep. That was when I was an intern, and we were roaming around the office in Northwestern helmets and Saluki helmets.
Oh, my gosh. That's
remember
right.
that, John?
I didn't know. I have no idea what you're talking about until he mentioned the helmets.
Yep.
And who won that game? Probably Northwestern's crushed us.
Yes, but that wasn't the point.
There have been plenty of opponents of SIU's quality that we have not beaten. So
yeah, no kidding. So you're undergraduates from Northwestern. And did you know Dave then when you were at Northwestern outside of the radio station?
I would see him at different practices and, of course, on the sideline or on the side of the court for various games and things like that. And made a few appearances in the Dave Ennett broadcast booth.
Oh, I didn't know that. Was he a spotter or something? You didn't let him do play-by-play or color?
Well, Ryan was doing games for the student station, right? Ryan, weren't you at the time, WNUR?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did a lot of those games. And there was one time you and I went up to Camp Randall, and I was your spotter up there.
I do remember that, yeah.
I'll just share this with you. It might not surprise you, Ryan, but I'm always bugging Dave to let me in the broadcast booth and help out. I was the spotter when I was living in Minnesota, and the Wildcats went up to play the Gophers. So I was in the booth at the Minnesota Stadium helping Dave out. And I would point to the person on the chart that I could tell through the binoculars made the tackle. That's what a spotter does. The problem is sometimes I would point to the wrong person. So I wasn't a very good spotter.
Ryan, sometimes.
And
just sometimes.
Yeah. And it only happened occasionally.
But really, I wanted to talk more than I wanted to spot. So I've been telling Dave ever since, if he wants to take a day off, I can say skip past to Jones. Jones back over to Johnson. Johnson inside to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not going to happen, Ryan. Ryan, good talking
you keep
to you.
Trying, though.
Yeah, nice. Dave, thanks for popping in.
Sure.
You know, when I thought about you, Ryan, back in the day and even since, I thought, boy, if you got a degree from Northwestern, don't go into broadcasting, man. That's probably what your parents said. You're in Plano, Illinois? What?
Well, wait a minute. Actually, you know, Ennett's got a degree from Northwestern.
Yeah, our Judy Markey did too. We've got some Northwestern alums still hanging around here. But, you know, I just think to me, with a degree from Northwestern, you could do anything. And going to WSPY Plano, which was my path and not a bad one, was maybe the sort of thing that would break a parent's heart.
Actually, my mom, I'm sure she's happy that I'm a lawyer. She's proud of me, but she still tells me all the time that she misses hearing me on the radio.
So how nice.
I'm sure she's thrilled right now listening and probably recording it.
So, okay, so you came up with a quiz for us like you did when you were a teenager, even before you were a teenager. And normally, how would it work? You would quiz us or we would take your quiz and give it to the listeners? How do we do this?
Yeah, usually it was the listeners would call in and I'd ask a question.
Okay. Now, you sent us a questionnaire. I've tweaked it a little bit just to make it as user-friendly as... Here's the problem. Ryan's idea of an easy presidential trivia question is way too hard for America. So I dumbed them down just a little bit, correct?
Just a little bit. There's still some tough ones, I think.
Did you take the ball and run with it with some honeymoon questions?
A little bit. I think I made those a little bit easier for the listeners.
Okay. So we have a couple of presidential trivia questions for our Mega Monday quiz, and none other than Ryan Morton's going to do it. So let's do this, Ryan. We'll take a commercial break now and get our caller. If you want to take the quiz, you get a Mega Pros hoodie, black or red, and you get to wear that proudly if you get all the questions right. If you get some of the questions wrong, you still get the hoodie. Call right now, 312-981-7200.
Upwork has the world's largest network of independent professionals. Let me just close this real quick. So if you need a back-end developer, a UI designer, or a project manager for 6 days or 6 months, Upwork is how.
Hey, I have this room booked at noon.
I'm just wrapping up here. Upwork professionals have the flexibility and capability to work from anywhere.
Yeah, it's 1201.
It's all yours. Which is nice if you're already low on conference rooms. Plus, they're proven, rated, and reviewed. When you need in-demand talent on demand, Upwork is how.
1-877 Cars for Kids. K-A-R-S Cars for Kids. 1-877 Cars for Kids. Donate your car today. 1-877 Cars for Kids. K-A-R-S Cars for Kids. 1-877 Cars for Kids. Donate your car today.
To learn more about our programs and to donate, visit us online at carsforkids.com. Remember, that's cars with a K. Pickup is quick and easy. You'll also get a vacation voucher and maximum tax deduction.
1-877 Cars for Kids. K-A-R-S Cars for Kids. 1-877 Cars for Kids. Donate your car today.
Also accepting boats, motorcycles, RVs, and real estate donations.
To accommodate real ID demand, Secretary of State facility hours and days have changed. Go to realid.ilsos.gov to learn more.
Want a financially secure retirement? Hi, Rick Edelman here. Let me tell you how we do it here at Edelman Financial Engines. We start with helping you figure out how much income you'll need in retirement. Next, we look at your pension and Social Security income, and finally, your savings and investments. As part of all this, we consider when you want to retire, your life expectancy, and your spouse's age and life expectancy, too. We look at inflation, taxes, and investment rates of return. And very important, we ask how you feel about leaving money to your kids and grandkids. There's a lot to consider, and if you've never tackled the topic of retirement security before, it can be a little intimidating. That's why you should come talk with us. At Edelman Financial Engines, we're experts at retirement planning, and we can help you make sure that your retirement is exactly what you want it to be, well-funded. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines, 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com.
Come back to Chicago.
To Chicago.
Chicago.
Drove to Chicago.
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 Shy City.
I'm coming home again.
You saw Chance the Rapper at the NBA All-Star Game, if you watched all of it, I guess. I didn't, but I think I saw him on some of the clips out there. It's 11:44. This is WGN, so it's our Mega Monday Morning Quiz. Today featuring presidential scholar and Naperville attorney and father of one, Ryan Morton, an intern and fan of this show years ago, and he's helping us out this President's Day. We've reconnected. All right, so you ready to give us some questions, Ryan?
You let me know which question, and I'll read it.
Okay, we're going to go with line two, first of all. That's going to be our contestant. Hey, Ed, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John.
Hey.
I'm very good. Thank you.
Great. So it's a little family reunion for us here. And, Ed, I'll be able to help you out because Ryan's going to ask the questions. You ready?
All right.
All right, Ryan, you're on. Question one.
All right. We'll start with a 2020-related question. If either Pete Buttigieg or Michael Bloomberg become president, he would join Andrew Johnson, Grover Cleveland, and Calvin Coolidge as the only presidents with what on their resume?
So give me the first two again. It's Buttigieg or Sanders.
No, Buttigieg or Bloomberg.
Bloomberg. And if they become president, they will join what elite company?
Andrew Johnson, Grover Cleveland, and Calvin Coolidge. Three very well-known presidents.
What would they all have in common? Any guesses on that there, Ed?
I'm going to guess they were all mayors.
What's the
answer?
That
is correct.
Ding, ding. Wow. Nice job, Ed. Woohoo.
Thank you.
Question number two. Go.
All right. We'll stick with 2020. Which of the following presidents was not impeached? A, Andrew Johnson.
Yeah.
B, Richard Nixon.
Right.
C, Bill Clinton.
Right.
Or D, Donald Trump.
Who is not impeached, Ed?
That would be Nixon. He resigned.
Two for two. Question number
You're
three,
on a roll.
Please.
Okay. In 1920, Eugene V. Debs of Indiana ran for president for the fifth time, actually earning nearly a million votes while running from his prison cell.
Wow.
A century later, he shares what attribute with candidate Bernie Sanders?
Ooh.
Can you make this a multiple choice?
I can help.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, hold on. Bertrand, go.
I'm going to say they were both socialists.
They were both socialists.
Hey, nicely done, Steve Bertrand. Whoop, whoop. Ed, you get credit for that.
It's back when we could lock them up.
All right, Ryan, what's the next one?
All right, one more for 2020.
Yep.
If Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, or Michael Bloomberg becomes president, he would immediately become the oldest person to ever serve in that office at the age of 78. Who currently holds that record?
Who's currently the oldest person to have served as president?
Yes.
Boy, I'm going to have to guess Reagan.
Is that
That's
right?
A good guess. That's what it was.
Wow.
All right.
Isn't Donald Trump pretty close to that? How old's Trump?
Trump is the oldest elected, first time. He was elected at the age of 70. So if he wins re-election, he will also be 78 before he leaves office.
Wow. But Bernie and Joe are, how old are they?
And Bloomberg. All three of, well, Biden becomes 78 in November. Bloomberg just turned 78 on Friday, and Bernie is 78.
When I get to be king, I'm going to say you can't be president when you're 80. Sorry, 80-year-olds. My parents are alive and 80, and they're sharp as tacks. But I don't know that you should be president when you're 80. The physical demands, to say nothing of the mental demands. Okay, what's the next question, please?
All right, next question. Ironically, given his philandering reputation, he was the first Boy Scout to become president. He then donated much of his presidential salary to the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts of America, as well as the United Negro College Fund and the Cuban Families Committee.
Okay, read the first part of that question again.
Ironically, given his philandering reputation, he was the first Boy Scout to become president.
Bertrand, are you listening, Steve, on this one?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess John Kennedy.
You got that one right, too.
Nice.
Ed is killing it. Ed is killing it.
You I had to start with philandering.
I think Cuba was the tip there, too. Cuba was also a bit of a nod. All right, give us another one.
Who is the only president who also served on the U.S. Supreme Court?
Really? A U.S. president who has served on the U.S. Supreme Court?
I can do that one, I think.
Well, let's see if Ed's got it first. You got a shot at that, Ed?
Who was that?
Yeah, you don't know.
I think it was the big guy, Taft.
What do you think, Steve?
You know what? I think you might be right. I was thinking John Quincy Adams, but I think he went on to be Speaker of the House.
Ryan?
It was William Howard Taft.
There you
Holy
go. Nice
cow.
One.
Listen to this. Ed from Wheeling.
It's all coming back to me from high school.
Really? I mean, you weren't a history major in college, or you're not a lawyer or a professor or something?
No, I am not.
Well,
I was not.
And you probably complained it would never pay off for you.
Look at that. And you're about to win a Mega Pros hoodie, sir.
Woo!
All right, what's the next one?
I've got some honeymoon questions for you, John. You want some of those for Valentine's Day?
Post-Valentine's Day, go. Damn.
All right, Dave Emmett might want to chime in on this one. What future president started their honeymoon by taking his wife to the Michigan Northwestern football game?
Michigan Northwestern football game. Dave has exited the studio. You want to take a shot at that one, Ed? Their honeymoon.
I don't know. I hear Michigan. I think Ford.
Yeah.
Let's go with Gerald Ford.
That's how they celebrated it. The next day, he and Betty went to Evanston for the game.
All right, how about another honeymoon presidential question?
By the way, unfortunately, the Wolverines won that game 28-0. What renowned adventurer president took his wife mountain climbing up the Matterhorn on their honeymoon?
Could you repeat that?
What renowned adventurer president took his wife mountain climbing up the Matterhorn on their honeymoon?
Adventure president, I can only think of Teddy Roosevelt.
See, he doesn't even need the hints, John.
I know. I was going to. That one I knew, but I'm a Roosevelt guy. But Ed's a president guy. Ed's got
them
all.
That was a complete guess.
Yeah,
well, you
guess.
Got it right.
Yeah. Got another one?
Sure. We'll stick with the honeymoon theme. Their wedding was small, only 15 people in the living room. After putting a little rock on her finger, they honeymooned on a trip to Mexico with her family. Everyone staying in the same hotel. Maybe they all knew they needed to watch his wandering eye.
Hey, hey, hey! All right, what do you guess on that one, Ed?
Focus on the ring, Ed.
The town.
That one, I'm drawing a blank.
The ring.
Read it one more time, Ryan. He'll get this
sure.
one.
The wedding was small. After putting a little rock on her finger, they honeymooned on a trip to Mexico.
That would be Clinton.
That's who it is.
I knew they all
that little rock the first time around.
So Bill and Hillary went on their honeymoon with her parents to Mexico?
Apparently so.
Okay. One more question from Ryan Morton. I don't know how many more you have in front of you, Ryan. Give us one more.
Okay, I will. I'll go with this one. What president was so committed to public service, a trait he inherited from his presidential father, that after he lost re-election, he successfully ran for Congress, serving 17 years in the House?
That would seem like such a demotion today, right? Like, you don't see Bush, Reagan, Clinton, Obama, Jimmy
Carter.
Right,
can you imagine Obama coming back to Chicago to run for a seat?
And serving 8.5 terms as a local representative after having been president. Wow. Okay, so who was it that did that? You got a guess on that, Ed?
John Quincy Adams.
There you go. That's it.
Ryan, I'm not going to call you anymore. We're just going to get Ed from Wheeling to do this president.
I think he's taken the title. Absolutely.
Hey,
should've gone with the harder questions.
What do you, no kidding. Ed, what do you do for a living, sir?
I am a retired I'm a retired mailman.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, you have renewed my faith.
An overeducated retired mailman.
You're certainly
he's
educated.
A Cliff Clavin.
Yes.
Right.
You've renewed my faith in our listenership and America. You hold the line. Elif's going to get your information, Ed, and we'll make sure you get that Mega Pros hoodie, okay?
Thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you. And Ryan, what a pleasure to reconnect with you. Maybe you should join us again next. We'll renew this next President's Day. Is that all right?
I would love to, John.
What is your daughter's name, your wife's name?
So my wife is Nika, and I had always wanted to name my kids after presidents, like Carter, Reagan, Madison, Grant. I know you're fond of that name.
Yes.
So her name is Alice.
Oh, no kidding.
So she did. My wife did not have the same dream that I had. But Alice is Teddy Roosevelt's daughter, so I'm fine with that.
Oh, I thought that's what you were referring to. I mean, the famous Alice. That's maybe the most famous name in presidential child history. Alice is...
Don't tell my wife that. She doesn't need to know that there's a presidential connection.
That's funny, though, because Alice doesn't strike me as a specially 2020 name. It's an older name. I like to see older names coming back again, if that's in fact happening. But Alice is a lovely name.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a family name on my wife's side.
Nice to hear you, my friend. Well done, and let's visit again, if not next year, sooner, okay?
Thanks so much, John.
That's an attorney named Ryan Morton. Went to Northwestern, used to intern here, and we haven't talked to him in a very long time. What a nice young man. By the way, speaking of names, named after songs, lots of texts about this. John, my daughter is named Alex after Alex P. Keaton from Family Ties. So not a song, but I'll take that. Alex is a girl's and a boy's name, isn't it? John, our dog is named Bingo. John, why don't you ask your listeners if any of them have a family member named Susu Studio? My daughter is Melissa from Sweet Melissa from the Allman Brothers. By the way, Steve Bertrand, Lobo is the name of the group that you were thinking of.
Yeah, I said Los Lobos. I was close, but yeah. I was off about two decades.
Yeah, you know, Lobo works for me. If you, that is, would be as good as I get most stuff. John, I am named after a song. I am Ramona.
My Ramona?
No, Steve.
Okay.
My husband said yes, only because the dancer in Flashdance was named Alex. I guess her name is Alex, too. For the girl's name, there was Waylon Jennings' song, Amanda, but we are Mexican, so I changed the syllable sound like Spanish, Amanda. I'm not doing that well, but I get your point. My name is Wendy. I was named after Wendy Warren of the News. while my parents were driving to the hospital. Wendy Warren was doing the news, or is that Wendy Warren of the News is a song? And I dislike my name, Leslie, after my grandfather, Arthur Leslie Kincaid. Everyone pronounces it with a Z instead of an S. Well, that's another issue entirely. And Ella said, hey, you got to take a break. Got to get ready for the news.
Chicago's very own WGN Radio Chicago.
Grainberry, Grainberry, healthy cereal for your family.
Hi, I'm Peter Harris for Grainberry Cereals. The world does not need another cereal unless it truly has something new and important to offer. I believe that Grainberry Cereals can really make a difference in your life. I'm not a radio announcer. I just want to help you and your family live healthier, and I know Grainberry Cereals can do that. Here's what makes Grainberry whole grain cereals so amazing. 1. Grainberry Onyx Sorghum contains more antioxidants to help protect you from all known free radical threats to your body. 2. Grainberry slows down sugar absorption and the digestion process. And 3. Grainberry contains less sugar than most cereals and tastes great. There's just no cereal like Grainberry.
Try Grainberry Honey Nut Toasted Oats, Multi-Bran Flakes, and Cinnamon Frosted Shredded Wheat, all with amazing Onyx Sorghum.
Grainberry, Grainberry.
Look for Grainberry at Strachan Van Til.
This is David Hochberg of Team Hochberg. Looking to secure financing on a new home or refinance your existing home? Then you need to call Team Hochberg. When securing your mortgage, you can either waste your time getting terrible service from an online lender, or you could call Team Hochberg now at 855-56-DAVID or visit our website, 56david.com. Team Hochberg has helped thousands of WGN listeners, but we can't help if you don't call 855-56-DAVID or visit our website, 56david.com.
Homeside Financial, Equal Housing Lender, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, MB 6676-1019, NMLS 1124061.
Call Dibs now at one of three iconic Hilton hotels in Chicago with over $200 of savings. Hilton Chicago, Palmer House Hilton, and the Drake Hotel. Visit HiltonsOfChicagoDibs.com.
A lot of people have been asking, where's Butler ranked in the new AP rankings?
Just came in. They're at number 21, so they're down a couple.
That's a tough loss over the weekend. How did your Marquette Warrior, Golden Eagles do?
They dropped one. They're down to 19 from 18 because they lost to Villanova.
Oh, yeah.
By tough one, game. but by more, really.
DePaul plays Villanova this week. I'm looking forward to that Wednesday tilt. The Joint Relief Institute fixes your knee pain and changes lives. One patient told them that they had not seen their upstairs in years that hurt too much to go up. Now they do. Isn't that an amazing thing? A lot of people are motivated to go to the Joint Relief Institute because their kids or grandkids are getting married and they want to dance at their wedding. I want you to dance every day. They'll use digital imaging. They'll see where the tissue's deteriorated. They put a lubricant in there. It works. It's a fast, non-surgical procedure, pain-free and almost surely covered by your insurance. They've got an expert to help you with that part of it. It's the same phone number for either location, 708-888-0000, 708-888-0000. As in zero pain. Jisuki's down the hall. What's coming up on your show today?
Hello, John Williams.
Hey.
We're going to be talking about the entire spectrum. We're going to be talking about generational poverty and then also talking about generational wealth and how you can maintain resilience in family-run businesses and enterprises.
Wow.
Yeah. Going to cover all that in the first half of the show.
Yeah. Talk about thinking big thoughts right around the corner.